industry. Maybe you got that four pager? Colleagues, if we cooperate, then we can finish by 3:30, I think. Everybody got the document? Right. He's harassing you now, Pete. Can you hit back? Tandy, she can manage herself. Tandy, hit back, Pete. You got the right to hit back. Don't start. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we are all three of them. Beware. Okay. He brings it upon himself. Yeah. All right, so colleagues, can we move on, please? So you got the document. So why did we meet on the 31st? 2-1-1. We wanted to find out what happened at Steinhoff, get a briefing. 2, what each of the regulators has been doing, intends to do, by when, how they cooperate with each other, how they cooperate with regulators in other countries, and their tentative deadlines to finish their investigations and report to the Parliament and the public. What's the role of parliamentary committees in exercising oversight of a Steinhoff directly without taking over the role of the regulator's legally mandated role and without preempting their outcomes? What are the roles of our respective committees? What we do jointly, what we do separately? The legal parameters of our role. Now, this Frank will speak to, but essentially as politicians, our view is, for your consideration, Parliament needs to be far more effective, including over the private sector and our oversight role. But except we have, in very specific circumstances, we need to avoid converting parliamentary committees into courts of law or commissions of inquiry and carry out full-scale investigations where there are already bodies doing that. In the case of Steinhoff, we refer to all the bodies here and elsewhere that are doing that. 3.3, our job is to primarily hold those regulators to vigorous and rigorous account, and we will do that. 3.4, we can't take over the role of these bodies. Do we have the forensic, technical, and other capacity and time to do this? For example, it would mean analyzing hundreds of thousands of documents across South Africa, Germany, and the Netherlands, and possibly up to 27 other countries in which Steinhoff operates, if we had to fully examine Steinhoff and cross-examine them. If we are to pursue this route, we could approach the Speaker to have a commission of inquiry into Steinhoff. This will mean allocating the necessary time and effecting a fundamental change to our program. We'll have to get an evidence leader, allowing members of the committee to have like 15 minutes each to cross-examine. There will also be, to me, in legal clarity about what we're doing and what the investigative bodies are doing. Frank will speak to that. Of course, we have an oversight responsibility of Steinhoff directly. But not just because of the implications on the PIC, Government Employees Pension Fund, but because of its impact on South African society as a whole. And we don't believe the regulators, none of them is here, are being as effective as they should. So how can we find an oversight space between only holding the regulatory and other bodies to account and carrying out a full-scale investigation? 3.7, we need to be clear, get legal guidance on this. 3.8, we have attached evidence from the advice from Frank. 3.9, we've engaged the House Chair on aspects of the program. Now, this is the key thing. By the nature of these corporate scandals, the investigations take very long. These irregularities are usually very elusive, highly complex, and global in nature, requiring considerable work before investigations can be finalized. Some of the work so far suggests that it's interesting. It seems that the irregularities are mainly in Germany. Very few at this stage, interestingly. Maybe they'll discover later in South Africa. 4.2, we should have a follow-up joint briefing on Steinhoff matters by the end of this quarter, and we're proposing the 28th of March, or is it the 27th of March? You can look at the program. It's the 28th of March. Then we're going to have a follow-up meeting where we're suggesting that we bring in the CIPC, because they're also investigating. Now, there's a request from the DA that we include SARS. Maybe Mr. Lees can help us in that regard. Why would we call SARS? It's not very clear to the committee chairs, but maybe you can speak to Mr. Mania. Well, of course, he's away because of a bereavement. His father-in-law passed away, as everybody knows. We have engaged with the chair of police committee, Mr. Bukman, about Euster. We need to expedite the PIC bills, which you're doing right now. I wrote to the minister in that regard to the Airbus amendment, and I'm waiting for him to come back to us. We are already having the FSR regulations, I'm pleased to say. We put it down for a Friday. We asking the committee of researchers to do research regularly, and now we've got to take a decision today, confer with the other committee, whether you want us to proceed with a subpoena. Alan, I haven't had a chance. I need to write a letter. Can you remind me? To Eustace. I spoke to him on Friday, Eustace's lawyer. What have we done so far? We had a meeting of the House chair and the chairs the very next day after the 31st. A week later, the four chairs met, or at least we conferred. One of us couldn't make it, I think. We have sent the letters to the minister. We have approached the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Police. I have phoned everybody, Financial Services Board, IRBA, and who else? FSB. Now, IRBA replied to us yesterday or the day before. Yesterday, I think, and we forwarded that reply to you. We've asked all of them to issue press statements to keep the public aware that they're investigating. And we've got a brief from Frank. And we have approached the House Chair to get a senior counsel opinion. Where's Frank? Can you deal with your document in 5 minutes, 10 minutes at most?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. I think the first part of the document, I'll be very brief around it. I mean, the Constitution gives the power to the National Assembly and its committees to maintain oversight over the execution of executive action, national executive authority, my apologies. So, and any organ of state, and when we look at the definition of organ of state, it is, in a word, it's rather fluid. It really is not just the nature of the business, but also the functions that are performed. And we've had the SASA example where Cash Paymaster was, for the purpose of delivering social grants, seen as a public function, which then is subject to oversight. So when we're looking at Steinhoff, and of course I'm not sure exactly what the issue in Steinhoff is. I don't think anybody knows at this point in time. But for what Steinhoff does in terms of retailing, the brief that we received in the old assembly, in my view, it's not a public function. It's a commercial function they fulfill there. But there is the issue of public funds that are being used. I mean, the whole issue of company law and control over the share price, insider training. There's a lot of government involvement, regulatory control over it. So it is not that I can say empirically there's no way that Parliament can look at Steinhoff and so on within its constitutional mandate. I would just like to, actually I should have started with that, Chairperson. I mean, Parliament, like any organ of state, can only do what the Constitution and law allows it to do. It doesn't have any other inherent power other than making rules for its procedure. So it can't just go out there and call for no purpose other than oversight anybody. So it's pursuant to its oversight, it can call Mr. Eustad, it can call Steinhoff, it can say, well, we're doing oversight over IRBA, we're doing oversight over the CIP, the Commission, Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, etc., over SARS, if there's a tax issue, but it's a company that's incorporated in Holland. So, Chair, that to me is the issue. Then, for me, if we proceed with it, there's two questions there. One is the procedure. What format does an investigation take? So one can have what we've now seen coming from the example of the SABC board, where we had an evidence leader and charges were put to the board and the board was dismissed in the end. We must be mindful in that example that that was a procedure based more or less on the Act, the SABC Act, which says this is how you must remove a board. In the meantime, we've also now had the state capture report from the public protector, and a similar process is followed in the Public Enterprises Committee. There's other examples where we want to have a similar kind of investigation. We've had the Piccoli matter in years before, which took a different format, where members acted without an evidence leader. So, Chair, there's various ways of doing it, and it is about resources and also about what is it that we are looking for. I think we must be very clear. If we want information about having maintaining oversight over the regulatory bodies, what is the best method to get to that point? If we want to expose certain criminalities and then refer the matter over to law enforcement, what method is best placed for that? So that is where we are. And, Chair, there is the request to get senior counsel to say, what is the boundaries, what is the limits, or this, how do we circumscribe what Parliament and its committees in general can do when it deals with these matters? Chair, I think we must be mindful of what happened in 2008. I mean, a collapse in the private sector affects the public sector. It affected the whole world in that area. So it is something that one keeps in mind. So the issue of getting senior counsel to advise generally on that matter, I think, is a good idea. And I mentioned it at the end of the opinion. I also mentioned in a certain paragraph there all the role of the regulatory bodies, Chair. The reason I did that is specifically to deal with the fact that when we have a constitutional state like we have, Parliament actually assigns a lot of its powers to these regulatory bodies to say, this is what you need to do, and I want to see that you do it in terms of legislation. So there's no point, and in fact it will go against the Constitution, to say, well, we don't have faith in that specific body, let's do it ourselves. I mean, that's not how... If you want to do that, you must sure to have that legislative power to do that. So one will be wise to just get some guidance from senior counsel. Not that our unit can't provide that advice, but I think it's good coming from an outside independent legal counsel to say, this is the ambit of your oversight. So, Chair, that in short is it. So there are certain risks. The one risk I haven't pointed out is that we have this parliamentary immunity for witnesses in Parliament. So whatever you say under oath in Parliament cannot be used against you unless it is a question of perjury. You deliberately lie to Parliament. But the information coming out of a committee might impact on the rights of other people who might be or not be under investigation. And that includes juristic people like Steinhoff itself or its directors. So the example I use there, should we call Mr. Uister and say, well, please explain to us what happened, and he comes up and says a whole lot of things which he cannot be prosecuted for. That might impact on the rights of other people, other directors, or Steinhoff itself in terms of the Companies Act. So one must be mindful of that. Whether it will, I don't know until the information comes out. But it is a risk that one must just be mindful of. And again, senior counsel could be best placed to advise there. I'm certainly not a company law expert. But it's an area that one must be mindful of, because it might impact on the right to a fair trial for that body corporate or for the individual director. It might also impact on the way the investigation is done by the bodies that have been empowered by legislation passed by Parliament. So it's a whole web of possibilities and risks that one must just look at. So I think it'll be good to get senior counsel, Chairperson.
Just to cut to a chase, the issue before this committee is, do you want to establish a commission of inquiry, and then we'll have to apply for that and get an evidence leader, because that is the safest route to go. And then what you want to do that for, given the FSB of German, Dutch authorities, JSE, everybody looking at this. So that's the issue. Any comments on that? That's the key issue. Do you want a commission of inquiry?
Mr. Chairman, I can't really answer that question. I mean, I think that the issue of Steinhoff is a major issue. But as you say, there are a number of investigations taking place, and I can't give you a response right here and now that yes, we want or we don't want. I'm sorry. My apologies for that.
What's the end?
Do we as a portfolio committee have capacity to deal with this matter? I think that's where we need to start. If not, then we have no choice but to get external people who are experts to deal with this matter.
Particularly? Right. It was that we do not support a commission of inquiry. We met and discussed this matter last week. We think the regulatory body should do it. But we also think that because this is something that's going to constantly come up in committees, and there are some questions about the Public Enterprises Portfolio Commission inquiry, we've engaged the Speaker's office, and interestingly, their view is that it's not about Steinhoff and Capitec. Parliament needs to be clear about this. Their view is that you can't do the investigations that I think one individual or maybe a party once done, but they want senior counsel opinion. So in the meanwhile, I'll take it that for now, the majority view is that we don't want a commission of inquiry. And that, as I remember the study group meeting last week, we took a decision to broadly agree with the sort of things that are in this document. So that said, we can move on. We're not saying, Mr. Lees, you can't come back to us, but that's it. Then the decision that we have to take is the one that the other three chairpersons have proposed with myself, which is that we invite the CIPC on the 28th. They've agreed to that date. We invite SARS if it's necessary. Mr. Lees, can you tell us why you want SARS there? It may be necessary. I don't know. What are they supposed to do? Could you come back to us on that? But in the meanwhile, it's the CIPC, Financial Services Board, JSE, who else? And the regulatory bodies, right? We'll invite Steinhoff to give us a report on progress on the PwC inquiry. Okay. That's the program. On the program, is the agreement on that? Good.
My apologies, Chair.
Yeah.
Please, can you please recap what you've just said?
Yeah, it's in the document.
Tandy.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's there. It's a CIPC, right? You look at the document, it's there.
Okay.
CIPC. The FSB, IRBA, and the JSE. And then we invite...
The ANC study group resolution.
Yeah, last week.
Okay.
Okay. And then the final thing is the... we invite Steinhoff, but for focus specifically on progress in regard to the PwC report. I have engaged with all of the stakeholders apart from JSE to alert them that this is a proposal, but I have no mandate until the Standing Committee on Finance agrees, so I will now put it in writing via Alan, and I will confer with the co-chairs. They have agreed to this, but they said they don't need to go to their committees because there's broad agreement with this thing. Well, I don't know how they've managed it, but I said, no, I want to take it to our committee. Okay? Fine. The second thing to say is we now must take a decision on whether we want to take Eustace. I have spoken to his lawyer on Friday last. I told him that the co-chairs feel that we should write to Eustace again to say his excuse that he was not involved in Steinhoff anymore and therefore he will not attend is a lame answer. It is precisely because he was involved that we want him to be here as we wanted Mr. Wieser to be here, who did in fact attend. Obviously, we will engage with their lawyers, through our lawyers, to ensure that he answers questions in the House or in the committees that do not undermine any legal case he might have in his defense in respect of actions that might be taken in Germany, Holland, in this country, and elsewhere. That is his legal right. Am I right, Frank? Am I wording it correctly? I'm not a lawyer. Can you help me here? Right. So that's broadly it. I will draft a letter along those lines that we want him to be here, Frank, and you will help me with that. Now, should we put in the letter that if you do not, I hope journalists are listening carefully to me. There's no decision taken. I'm asking the committee for advice. Is it our view as a committee? It would be nice if members, because we have to take a decision, members, is it our view that if he does not come on the 28th of March, we consider, let's put it that way, we consider, please, can you help us, please, man, what is our view? We consider actually applying for a subpoena. Can you explain, have I said anything that's legally questionable? No. So that's a policy decision, right? Can you explain very quickly to members Am I right to say we do not subpoena people unless it's a last resort?
Yes, Chairperson. We have subpoenaed people, including individuals.
So we will consider, not cooperate, we will consider subpoenaing. Right. Now, anything with that, any problems there? Good. So that's agreed, right? So we're done with that. 28 it is. Then the second issue, then, let's go to the program, colleagues, very quickly. The rest of it, the broad thrust of what's here is agreed to. The DA will come back to us if they defer. And if the ANC changes its mind at any subsequent study group, it will offer us its view. To obviously serve in that study group, so I know what's happening there. Now, I want to draw people's attention to the FSRA regulations, right? Friday the 16th of March, the PIC bills were taken forward. Now, here, to be fair to Commissioner Moyane, he said that to meet with him on the 20th is out, it's too close to the end of year date for raising revenue. We had the same problem last year. It's errant on our part, my part in particular, but none of the committee members pick it up, so we are collectively accountable for this. So we moved the Makwakwa matter forward to the 13th now, right, and the KPMG report and IFS. I should also let you know, I got a letter from the South African Institute of Tobacco, and I met with some of them about 2 weeks ago. They feel that the amount of money the country is losing through illicit tobacco trade is huge, huge, huge. I think we should put this on the agenda for the 13th as well, Alan and Tebo. Okay? There was answer for that. I have written a reply, both of which, have I sent it to you yet, Alan? I sent it to you last night, their letter and my reply. You sent it out to members. Okay, so you've got it. Okay, on Capitec, there was a request from the EFF that we meet with Capitec. By that time, I'd already initiated a whole lot of discussions, and we were concerned to find the balance between ensuring Capitec and others account to us, given what happened in African Bank in 2008. On the other hand, we were concerned that depositors will start fleeing and so on, because there are questions about the Viceroy report. So we had to be fair to both sides. In any case, Capitec reached out to me as the chair and asked to meet with me. I said, no, given the sensitivities of the issue, I contacted Floyd to tell him that we are going to deal with this matter. Now, tomorrow from 8:45 to 9:55, we are meeting with Capitec in a subcommittee-type meeting, so we can get a briefing. It includes two ANC, one DA, and one EFF. The meeting is still on. You've sent the notice out, Alan, to everybody, and just remind them. The next thing, then, is we are going to meet with Capitec, I suggest, if you're okay, because it's the only slot we've got, on Tuesday, the 20th of March, or... can we give them some latitude? We can engage them around Tuesday, the 27th of March, Tuesday. Colleagues, we are having SARS on the 27th of March. That's an utterly absurd proposal, right? Because the year ends 3 days later. It's not fair on SARS. I think we should drop that. Now, we're meeting with Treasury now. Do we need a quarterly report? So I'm pleading that we drop that. We have the quarterly report in the first week, you come back, which is usually a committee week in the second quarter, and then what we do is we replace that with Capitec. Is that agreeable? But there we'll invite the Financial Services Board and all of you, right, will be here, and we invite Capitec to respond. We're not cross-examining Capitec at this stage. In fact, there are questions about the Viceroy report, and Zakhele and his team will prepare some stuff for us. So if there's any issue there, please comment, colleagues. Oh, yes, I should draw your attention to the following things. Other issues that we have to deal with. Well, Capitec we can insert in. Rates and monetary bill. Now, here's another proposal we are asking members to consider. And can you come back to us by tomorrow? Given the heat that has been aroused, understandably, through the rates, through the VAT increase, instead of us having the rates and monetary bill processed from, let's say, May, June, up till October, we should treat the fiscal and framework in the House next week and then find a slot to start public hearings this quarter on the rates and monetary bill, because it's that that deals with the nitty-gritty of VAT increases. That's where we have to look at the zero-rated items. What we're doing next week and right now, the fiscal framework, is to look at the macroeconomic issues, right? the relationship between expenditure and revenue and broad sources of revenue, how much comes from VAT, etc. So while you can look at the VAT increase matter through the fiscal framework, it is better to treat both together. But because of the Money Bills Act, because the financial year begins on the 1st of April and the tax year begins on the 1st of March, we have to treat the fiscal framework quickly in terms of the Money Bills Act, and then we'll deal with the rates and monetary bill. So I'm asking parties to think about this and come back to us, Mr. Lees, within 24 hours, so we can then consider having hearings quickly.
Thanks, Chairman. You did indeed.
I contacted Mr. Lees yesterday to talk about David Manier and his bereavement. It seemed to me unreasonable to expect him to come to Parliament to present his private member's bill in the middle of family bereavement. That seemed unfair. So I tried to get hold of Alf, and then I contacted Mr. Manier by SMS and said, look, in fairness, we will have an overview of your bill by Frank and Alf can add, but you must come back when you're back in action and get another slot to go through your bill. Now, I understand through Mr. Lees also that he's agreed to that. So in fairness, he's not here because he had no choice. Okay. Secondly, that Mr. Lees, I spoke to him yesterday to think about bringing the rates and monetary bill forward, but our party will also discuss that later today.
Thanks, Chairman. Yeah, indeed. The what we're proposing is starting the process before the Easter recess, and so we won't get it done before the 1st of April then, or are we? No, okay. It's impossible. I was
a draft bill, and then they have to
redo it.
It can only be done in October, so but at least the issues are aired constantly over the next few months.
Yeah. I'm now speaking on a limb. As far as I can see, there's no reason why we should object to that.
Our study group will meet at and take a position on that. But I just want to alert you to this. There is a belief out there, understandably, because NGOs and the labor unions and even politicians are not so familiar with the complex Money Bills Act process. They think somehow you can stop the VAT increase through the fiscal framework alone. Now, if you choose to do that, I want to alert members to this. You will have to find sources of additional revenue, 22.9 billion, between now and next Wednesday. How are we going to do that? So the chairperson, Charles Depree, and myself drafted a statement today, which we ran through with Frank and explained the process. That in terms of the value-added tax, Section 7.4 Act, the minister announces sin taxes, if you like, and they come into effect immediately. Frank, are you listening? Am I right? And you come into effect immediately. The personal income tax and other forms of tax come into effect at the beginning of the financial year, 1st of April. So it's on the Dane State announced. Malusi announced the 1st of April, right? Now, Parliament retrospectively looks at that, and then within 12 months, they can continue to have VAT increase of 1%. But if within 12 months we don't agree to it, they have to reverse it. Or we can amend it by including extra zero-rated items and then find other sources of revenue. We have to work with the Appropriations Committee in that regard. So we have released a statement this afternoon. I think it's gone out, and we will send it to members, which tries to explain that. And there we choose our words carefully because the chair said no. We said we are considering bringing forward the hearings on the rates and monetary bill. So the ANC will decide this afternoon, and the DA is saying in principle they think it's fine. Okay. So that said, we will then insert that into the program. The next thing is... Now, on the financial sector transformation, the minister has announced that we're having, he's having a summit in April. Now, with many having, the new minister having come in, I don't know if it'll still go ahead in April, but we have to ensure that our recommendations are taken seriously by the FST, and so I'm saying that we need to meet regularly to put pressure on National Treasury. Okay, so that's an outstanding issue for next quarter. Having said that, I take it we're in agreement with the current proposals, and the only outstanding issue is the rate and monetary bill matter. Does that agree? Good? Fine. Thank you. Now, can we go on to the PIC bill? Because these colleagues of ours have come from Johannesburg, we can look at the money bills after that. So on the PIC bill, Frank, you're going to take us through them. Just alert us to the documents.
Chairperson, we're going to have to do a sharing of duties here. I've brought my colleague, Nolo Tanda, is here, who's in charge of that. So she will lead us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Sorry, good afternoon. I will speak to the proposed committee bill. Clause 1 of the bill inserts 4 definitions to the Act. That is the definition of the Banks Act, National Assembly, prescribed, and property. Clause 2 of the bill amends Section 4 of the Act by expanding the objects of the PIC. In terms of this clause, the corporation is to ensure that it promotes, facilitate, support, and assist in the buying of property by the depositors. Also, it must facilitate and support in economic growth, job creation, infrastructure development, and the reduction of social inequalities. Clause 3 of the bill substitutes Section 5 of the Act by extending the powers of the corporation to enable it to conduct the business of a bank, as stated in the Banks Act. Hence, there is a definition of the Banks Act that is being added to the definition in the Act. This clause also absolves the corporation from complying with the provisions of the Banks Act, because in terms of the Banks Act, for any corporation or any organization to act as a to conduct a business of a bank must comply with the Banks Act. But then there's a clause in the Banks Act that absolves the corporation from the application of the Banks Act, hence that amendment to the PIC Act. Clause 4 of the bill substitutes Section 6 of the Act. This clause determines how the board of the PIC should be constituted and provides for the appointment of the chairperson to be done on the recommendation of the National Assembly. The other executive and non-executive members must be appointed in consultation with Cabinet.
Sorry, I'm confused. Some of this, can we discuss this with Advocate Talman? The way we're managing documents is I hope the committee secretaries are listening. We don't have the documents. Like this morning's document had wrong pages, and the pages were missing, and the one I had. Now, as the most longest-serving committee secretary, can you arrange a meeting with Tao and sort this out? Now, for example, this one we don't have. When was this submitted? I don't have it. Where's the document? You don't have it either. Where's the document, Tao? No, it's not that one. Where's this one?
Chair, the bill that was sent to the committee, I'm speaking to that bill.
Yes, but where's the document that you have?
I didn't give the PowerPoint presentation to the committee secretary. I just thought the bill would be sufficient, Chair. Apologies for that.
Yeah, oh, we don't have this because you didn't give it. It's a bit disappointing.
I'll send it afterwards.
Can we just have it now? because we often make notes on it and so on, and it's a bit easier to follow if we have it. It's not clear to me either. Can we clarify whose bill is this now? Is this Mr. Mania's bill or our bill?
This is the committee bill, Chair. This is the proposed committee bill.
Where did these provisions come about the banks and so on? I'm a bit confused. Where did that come from?
That was the bill that was sent to you, Chair.
Yes, I know, but it's the first consideration of it by the committee.
Yes, Chair, it's just a presentation on the bill.
Yes, I know, but I didn't have to approve anything. That was a bill that flowed from our resolution
and
the proposals we had made.
Yes.
Right? Now, I'm not sure where these clauses come from. Who proposed it? I'm a bit confused.
Chair, the clauses were drafted from the resolution of the committee. Because, for instance, the provision that you're referring to about the Banks Act, the committee resolved that the PIC should be able to lend money to the depositors to purchase property. And for the, yes.
To look at it, and then the idea would be within the week or so, before you submit it to the House and so on, we need to sort of prove. But I'm just saying this, the implications of that are very sweeping. Surely there's another way of dealing with it. So perhaps the first thing we could do, my friend, is if you could arrange to email this to Boho. But carry on, I can see, using our resolution as a framework. Now, we didn't approve of this bill. This is your draft at the moment based on our resolution. Right. There may be other ways of dealing with the housing loan apart from this, yeah.
Chair, yes, this is just a draft stemming from the resolution. The committee can still make changes to the bill.
Yeah.
The committee can say we don't want what you've drafted, but then tell me what to put on the bill. So it's still at that stage. A clause for Chair, also stemming from the resolution, there was a concern about the governance in the corporation, for instance, who's the chairperson of the corporation, and who are the members of the board. Hence, the amendment to Section 6 of the Act. Clause 4 also stipulates the procedure that the National Assembly must follow in order to make a recommendation of the chairperson. The clause also states that a representative of the department, a representative of a trade union, must form part of the group of the non-executive members, which will be on the board of the PIC. The clause lastly provides that directive on the management of the PIC issued by the minister must be tabled in the National Assembly. This is a directive that is currently being issued in terms of Section 6 of the Act regarding the governance of the corporation and the issues in the board of the corporation. And now, because of that resolution of the committee, we thought we should put a clause that says that the minister must table that directive, and it must publish, the PIC must publish the directive on their website. Thank you. Clause 5 of the bill, because there was also an issue in the resolution of transparency. So clause 5 of the bill amends Section 10 of the Act and requires that annual report reflecting all investments of deposits, whether listed or unlisted, must be submitted to the minister for tabling and to be published also on the website of the corporation. Clause 6 of the bill inserts Section 11A into the Act. In terms of the, also this is to deal with transparency. In terms of the proposed insertion, the corporation must report annually on the total number of requests made and the details to the minister for approval of any significant transactions that require such approval. Clause 7 of the bill amends Section 12 of the Act and provides that the minister must progressively implement the new manner in which the board is to be constituted. Clause 8 of the bill substitute Section 16 of the Act, which gives powers to the minister to make regulations. In terms of the new proposal, the minister will need to follow a certain procedure when making regulations, and part of that requires him to, or her, to table the regulations once those regulations are made. And he must table those regulations, the regulations in the National Assembly. The clause further provides for the minister to consult with the governor of the Reserve Bank before he makes regulations regarding the corporation conducting the business of a bank. Now, Chair, I will deal with the process that this committee bill will need to follow in terms of the rules of Parliament. I'm told that by Frankie that the committee is currently waiting for the permission from the House to introduce the bill as required by the rules. If the committee wants us to not to add anything to the bill as presented, and then the committee must consult the JTM for advice on the classification of the bill. And in terms of Rule 276, the notice of the intention to introduce must be given or must be published in the Government Gazette together with a copy of the bill or an explanatory summary of the bill. The committee must then report to the House when it publishes the draft bill. If a copy of the bill is published in the Government Gazette, an invitation must be made to interested persons and institutions to submit written representations on the bill. Interested persons must be at least be given 3 weeks after publication to comment. The relevant department or organ of state must be given also sufficient opportunity to make submissions to the committee. In terms of Rule 59, which stems from the Constitution, Section 59, the committee must consider the written submissions and a meaningful public participation must take place. The committee may then make amendments to the draft bill based on those on the submissions made either by the PIC or the Minister of Finance or the interested persons. And then after that, the committee may deliberate on the bill. And then after the committee is happy with the bill, then the committee must consult the JTM again for advice on the classification of the bill. After that process, the bill must be certified by our office, and the committee may then introduce the bill by submitting a copy and a memorandum to the Speaker. The findings of the JTM, as per Rule 275, is tabled with the bill when the bill is introduced. The bill does not have a first reading. Instead, it is placed on the order paper for second reading. At least 3 assembly working days must elapse since the bill was introduced before the second reading. That is the, in essence, Chair, the process of the committee bill and what the committee bill, the draft committee bill, contains at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Members, do you want to comment on the content? Then we'll deal with the process. Here from. I'm not getting any help from the members. I'm not sure how to manage the process. Do you want to say something? It's Mania's bill as well. Shall we deal with that? I was just thinking.
Well, I'm just trying to work out this process. Yeah. I mean, we've got people directly involved who've come all the way from Joburg or Pretoria, wherever.
Yeah.
Are we going to get input from them
as
well?
Yes, but first we just wanted to hear from members.
Yes.
Who wanted a committee bill, whether this is reasonably representative of what they asked for. Now, I don't know why the committee secretaries haven't produced copies of the resolution. It is here. But Timothy says it's not. Where is it? Okay, can somebody give us a copy, please? Yeah, but, you know. If anybody got a spare copy they could lend the chair, it would just help because then it's easier to process if I have the resolution before me. Oh, all right, fine. Here it is. Now, we agreed on the following, right? There should be appropriate representation of the trade unions on the PIC board. The Rotundo, that's covered, right? We said consideration needs to be to provide for this. That's what you've done. C, we said But that's not a policy matter, right? You see, the PEC should seriously consider the trade union proposals on an appropriate housing loan for public sector employees who do not qualify for a loan. This is not a matter for amending the bill. This is a policy issue. That's all we said. So I think that whole section should be withdrawn. We didn't mandate this. So can we remove that? That was not meant to be put in the law. E is also a policy matter. F is also a policy matter. G is a policy matter. H. So what we really asked for is what I summarized at the end of a meeting. Regrettably, nobody gave you the text. But we said the following, that we want, one, representation by workers or trade unions, appropriate representation on the PIC board, point one. Point two, we wanted some reference to who would be appointed the board chairperson. Does it necessarily have to be the Deputy Minister of Finance? At the time, I said I think it should be, but the majority of members, including the ANC, said they were not actually happy with that, right? So the ANC must give us some guidance on that, because at that stage, I felt it is important that the Deputy Minister, because ultimately it's the fiscus that will have to come to the rescue if something goes wrong. But members of the ANC and opposition parties in the majority in S12A said, now, let the parliament appoint. So you could make a proposal in that regard. The parliament should appoint and set out the process and nominate a chairperson for the board. Thirdly, Parliament could nominate the Deputy Minister, of course. Thirdly, as I remember, it seems a bit unfair, really, because, I mean, I can't remember what we agreed on. We have to look at the minutes. Thirdly, we agreed there should be more vigorous oversight of PIC. So you could put something in the bill to deal with, and I hope the ANC is listening, because, peace, can you please help? You know, are we meeting while the House is sitting, Tandy? It's not fair, really. It's just not fair on the chair, because then I get dumped with it, and I get told who mandated you to do it. It's not fair. I'm implementing a decision that you took as a majority. I didn't even agree with it. You took the decision that actually the chair of the board should not necessarily be the deputy minister. That's what was proposed then. I don't agree with it, but I'm bound by the majority, even my own party. The things we agreed on were, one, that, to repeat, worker representation, trade union representation, appropriate trade union representation, that means the people who are on the GEPF, must be on the PIC board. That we agreed on. Two, we agreed that Parliament should have a say, in some form or another, in the decision of who should be the board chair. Thirdly, we said that we want, in the law, that the PIC should appear before the committee at least twice a year, something like that, more regularly. Four, that on the matter of unlisted investments, taking account of market sensitivities, the PIC should declare unlisted investments as far as possible. Five, I'm remembering from the past, colleagues, I may be wrong. Five, Frank, didn't you explain? I mean, I summarized at the end based on the discussions. I'm trying to recall it. 68, 62, it's hard to recall 6 months ago. Six, I think we said that we must put in the socio-economic transformation, that the PIC, in deciding on its investment decisions, needs to take into account the need for socio-economic transformation, something like that. Or the economic transformation of this country in the interest, primarily, you lawyers, of the poor and disadvantaged. Can anybody remember what else we mandated the legal services unit to do? Right. Any other comments? No. Can members propose? Sorry, yes. Yeah, Comrade Sheila.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the decision that the deputy minister must not necessarily be the chair, I'm not a regular attendant of the group. I just want to ask to look at the constitutionality thereof, whether it is not parliamentary. What is it? There's a word that they use. We are encroaching into the affairs of the executive, because if the PIC is falling under treasury, we need to be very careful there. We need to be very careful as not to interfere with the work of the executive as parliament. Thank you.
You look into that, right? But as I understand it, Master Tolu Shope, there are many other statutory bodies that we appoint the chairperson of, or we nominate the members of the board. And then the president and or the minister decides. So give you one example, the SABC. We have hearings here, and then we recommend 12 names. The president chooses, I think, up to nine, and then he decides who the board chair and deputy should be. Similarly, so we can do it. The question that I think is more appropriate, really, to look at is it appropriate not to have the deputy minister of finance there? Because if the PIC goes down, or the GEPF goes down, it's a defined pension benefit, right, Dan? And so we will have to rescue them. But your own comrades here decided, no, we should put that in. So we're bound by that mandate. In fact, you and I are on the same page, actually, but we're in a minority. So we have to allow it to go ahead, and then when we discuss it collectively and take it to caucus, the caucus might decide otherwise. But I see where what you say. But this is the mandate that was given to us as a chair. I have no choice but to abide by the mandate. Yes, Frank?
Chair, Letsanu can elaborate if she likes, but there's nothing in the Act as it stands now that says it must be that it's compulsory for the deputy minister.
And nor does it say that the president must choose. No. Yeah, but that's a very interesting point, Master Tole. Sure. There's nothing in the law at the moment. It's become a practice. It never used to be like that. The minister used to appoint somebody independent. Then in later years, I'm told, or we were told, it became the Deputy Minister of Finance. Is that right, Mr. Latondo? Yeah. But I know where you're going. In fact, I agree with you, my sister. But the majority decided otherwise, and we have to respect the majority view. But it's not final. It's merely a draft. Okay. So what else on that bill? No. Now, can we then deal with Mr. Mania's bill? Who's going to deal with that? Nolatando, you're going to take us to Mr. Mania's bill. Yeah.
Chair, can I just take you through the differences between the, because most of the things are the same. Let me just find my document, Chair, that is the differences. Yes, that one. The first difference, Chair, there are actually two significant differences. The one is the amendment of Section 4 of the Act. The Private Members Bill doesn't amend the objects of the Act, but the Committee Bill amends the objects of the Act as the resolution. As per the resolution, which said, as you were referring to, that the PIC must promote economic growth. You said that's not a legal matter. Yeah,
that falls away.
That falls away. Okay, Trey. And then the second difference is the amendment of clause of Section 5, which is Clause 3 of the Committee Bill, which is something that you've said, Chair, that is also a policy issue. It's the issue about requiring PIC to borrow money to purchase property to the depositors, to the investors. Yeah, those were the two differences.
What's the difference between Mr. Mania's bill and our bill?
If we take away those two clauses, Chair, then there won't be any difference. But then the resolution of the committee speaks to the things that were in and that are in the private members' bill.
So can members apply their mind and come back with positions on this, right? Because then it looks a bit absurd. Are members listening? We already have a private members' bill, and the committee decided that no, we must have a committee bill. Now, can the ANC come back to us on that? I don't know what we do. So, in the meanwhile, make the changes, draft it, and can you give us a draft by next week? Okay. That's it. Is there anything else now before we hand over to the GEPF and the PIC? Let's start with the PIC. Your responses, please.
Mr. Chair, I think I should introduce myself first. My name is Pamela Pala. I'm Senior Manager Corporate Legal at PIC. We had an extensive review of the private member bill and the committee bill. There isn't much of a difference, except the two, the introduction of the Banks Act and the property, financing of property. Besides that, there's also governance issues which we have comments about. With regard to the main objects of the PIC, our view is that we divide the two. The main object currently is that PIC be a financial services provider in terms of the FICE Act, and our view is that we expand that to include other pieces of legislation because we also make investments offshore. So that it not be limited only to the FICE Act, but that it be expanded to include other laws, other pieces of legislation. Further, with regard to the powers of the PIC to include the Banks Act and the property, internally at the PIC, we did not have a problem with that, with the inclusion of the two aspects. But I hear now that it's now a policy matter and not a legal matter. But on internal discussions at the PIC, we did not have any challenges with that, with that introduction. I think the other thing is the main objects of the PIC. Section 4, I think, needs to be divided into two. There's the main object, which is the FICE part, and there's also the introduction of that Section 4B with regard to the socio-economic transformation aspects. That paragraph we are happy with the introduction of that paragraph, but we propose that that paragraph be put elsewhere where we deal with investments of deposits, that's Section 10. I think that paragraph requires that we have an investment strategy. So our view is that it's just wrongly placed and that it be placed correctly under Section 10. The other aspects, I think I should go section by section. That will be easier. We agree with the further changes in paragraph 5 of the bill. As I think 5B, that's on page 4, sets out requirements for obtaining a license from the governor of the Reserve Bank, and it also provides for us to get an exemption from obtaining a license, that we get exemption from certain requirements arising from the Banks Act. So generally, PIC is happy with the addition in Section 5, page 4.
Okay. Responses from the team, Nolotando.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I understood you to be saying that you do not want us to put that in the bill, the bit that deals with the Banks Act. And therefore, the last comment made by the...
Pamela.
Pamela, yes. The last comment made by Pamela, we are going to have to remove that based on the instruction that the committee just gave now. So now we won't put that provision dealing with the Banks Act anymore because, as you said, it will be a policy decision, but you don't want it in legislation. Thank you, Chair.
Change their mind, that's fine. But you see, we're getting no guidance, and until you get any guidance, what do you do? All I'm telling you is that it was never intended to be in the law. It was a policy decision. But even though It was never meant to be in the law. If the majority wanted to be in the bill, then who am I to say no? So what we could do is get the PIC to give us a written response to all the proposals of the bill as it is now. And then we will decide what to do. So we don't take a final decision on that.
All right.
That might be a way out. So members can have more time to mull over this. But there are huge implications to that. And so, you know, you people are technically more sophisticated than us. And what we don't want is we agree to this thing without knowing the full consequences. We will have to have the Reserve Bank here, we'll have to have Treasury here, all the authorities here. We can't just take a decision blindly like that. That was a policy matter. It was never meant to be in the law, but now that it's put there, you guys are supporting it, and presumably also need to engage with your board chair about it. Well, the board chair is going to change now, presumably. It will, in fact, change shortly. So you want to talk to him about it, because my understanding is that this thing has huge implications. I wasn't even aware. Somebody phoned me and told me, do you know what the implications are? I said, I don't know how it got there. But let's see tomorrow. It was phoned yesterday. So I don't know enough either. So I don't want to take decisions. I think let's leave it on the agenda. Let the members, seem to have forgotten what they requested the chairperson to do. There's some memory lapses here that we will have to attend to. You have to be what? Good. All right. Yeah, great. Okay, fine. I mean, all the time to do all this work, and, you know, this is based on the resolution we took. It's true, I drafted it, but you all adopted it. So don't hold me to account. I don't even agree with some of the things here, but this is what was decided. That's your country. Unilaterally. It's not our fiefdom here. Do what you want. You got it by the committee, and the committee then changes its mind, then the chair has to adjust. Right. Let's move to GPF. Yeah.
Okay, and just to process things. No, in terms of the GPF. They've commented, Pamela,
right?
Or PIC. Okay,
yes.
Sorry. PIC has commented on the committee bill and not on the private members bill. So I have to assume, Mr. Chairman, that the private members bill is entirely acceptable and we could push it through right now and the PIC would...
A very fair presumption, Pamela.
Yes, as I said, we did review both documents, but we didn't see much of a difference except the introduction of the Banks Act and the property. Yeah. I'm corporate legal advisor for PIC. Yeah.
No, that's simply, I just want to check, because people can say things like politicians do without understanding the legal, and as Marcio Pesitola says, and constitutional other implications. When it's a lawyer, then you take it slightly more seriously. However, because your lawyers never agree, even the same person forgets what they said the day before, you think politicians are bad. You are totally untrustworthy on the one hand, but we learn from your technical expertise on the other, so we then decide as politicians, hey, this is what we think. And when we get found out, we blame the lawyers. That's how it works all over the world. This, my friend.
Yes. I was just referring to the rest of the comments. Just in principle, at high level, what our views are with regard to the governance processes that are being introduced. There is constant reference to the number of directors, like 2 executive directors and 10 non-executive. I think we should be careful in referring to that because it contradicts what is contained in our MOI. Because our MOI refers to a minimum of 10 and a maximum of 50. So we should be careful what we put in the document such that it does not contradict.
I
Chair, thank you very much. From the GPF, I need to stress that the GPF is the asset owner and not the PIC. And that's with regard to all the assets that the PIC looks after. So any insinuation that somehow the PIC can make decisions on the assets that doesn't own, I think is for clients problematic in the first instance. And I will go broadly with a number of key concerns. Some of it is very difficult for us as a client to comment on, but just to highlight some issues, and then, of course, kind of indicate on both the bills where we think there might be issues that the committee wants to consider. Now, in the first instance, I think I've made the point that the assets are owned by the asset owners, not the PIC. That's quite significant because I know, because I think it gets forgotten quite often. I'm also reminding the PIC of the fact. Chair, the first thing is to appreciate the nature of the PIC at this point in time. The PIC currently is an asset manager and is regulated through the FICE Act as by the Financial Services Board. Now, the whole conversation about becoming a bank might be attractive to the PIC, but it fundamentally changes the nature of the PIC. So while they might say, well, give us all the power that we might have to do all the things that we want to do, but you are fundamentally changing the nature of the PIC. It's becoming something else other than what it currently is. And that's where I think your comment, Chair, about the issue around the Benz Act is quite pertinent to take into account, that you are fundamentally changing the nature of the PIC. They might like it, but I think it might have different connotations from a systemic point of view as to whether you want this entity to be multiple things rather than to be one thing. So I think that's the first thing. Then the other one is to clarify that, and I know what you're going to say, you might be upset with me. The asset owners are the ones that dictate how the asset manager manages the assets. And it's not the asset manager itself that determines its mandate. So if we're now saying that the PIC must, for instance, have the ability to invest in property outside of the instructions of the clients, the GPF, the UIF, the compensation fund, again, you're changing the nature of the relationship between the PIC.
Can't allow that. Where is that being inserted?
That's, I think, in the committee bill.
No, we never mandated that.
Okay, so I'm just reading on the committee bill. That's what it's actually...
Yeah, no, Tando, you need to sort about it. No, we never mandated it.
So the whole issue around the PIC now being given the mandate to dictate where to invest, especially in property, or to have a particular view about socioeconomic orientation, that is well, as long as it's done in conjunction with the client.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, the clients have given that mandate to the PIC. Now, to put it in law, again, in a sense, remove that authority from the clients and put it in a different place, which I think is fundamentally something that the committee needs to be careful about when it is done. Then, of course, the issues around the governance of the PIC, I think it's very difficult for clients to have a comment on that other than to say that I think one needs to appreciate that the PIC is wholly owned by government. The government currently is 100% shareholder of the PIC, so of course the government can determine how they want to appoint the board and how they actually they want the entity to be structured. That clients might not have a say about. Of course, they might have a say in terms of whether they choose to use this particular service provider or another service provider. That I think is something that one needs to appreciate. But I think it's important that the entity is not constrained in how its governance processes are determined and arrived at. So while it might be good to say Parliament must have a say in how some of its structures are appointed or considered, it's also important to be cognizant that the processes must be such that the entity is always able to execute its mandate to its clients. So there must always be the appropriate governance structures and the appropriate operational structures to execute. And if the processes that are being changed are going to impact on that, I think the committee needs to be careful how they think about implementing those things. Then, of course, there are very, very specific areas. If I look at the committee bill, section 1, I know that you've taken it out, but again, it's fundamental to understand that you're changing the nature of the PIC, and you need to think very carefully about whether you want this concentration of services that an entity like the PIC provides is what you really want to have. And I think it needs to be thought out very carefully. Of course, the PIC will say, give us power, but I think it's something that you need to be careful about. Section 2 is where there is a specific mention of the kind of investment that the PIC must make. I think that is contrary to the powers and the requirements of our clients. In more specifically for the GPF, I think it's contrary to what the GP law currently provides. I think that that needs to be taken into account. Then we move on to section, section 3. The purpose of objectives, again, this is where the PIC is given a new mandate to become a bank or to do aspects of the bank. I've already commented on that. Yeah. Section 4, there is a whole new process of appointing the governance structures. I've already commented about it might be good to strengthen the committee and parliament supervision of that process, but at the same time, I think the parliament needs to be careful that they don't constrain the operations of the asset manager by possible delays in making sure that there are proper governance structures or operational capabilities of the asset manager. Section 5 speaks to the report, deposits. There, I know that transparency is something that the committee and parliament wants, and I think it's proper that it does so, but it also needs to be careful that it does not make the asset manager be the one that has the responsibility to disclose the information of the actual asset owners or the principals. So the asset manager is acting as an agent. It doesn't actually own that which it looks after. That actually belongs to the principal. Now, if it's now starting to disclose the information of the principal without the say-so of the principal, I think there's a contradiction in actually making that kind of provision. Section 6, taking requests to the minister. I think this actually seems to put the minister in a much stronger position than the minister is currently at, because the current PIC law and GP law actually places that in the hands of the client, not in the hands of the minister. So maybe what we need to do is to make sure we strengthen the distinction between what decisions can be made by clients and instructing the PIC to act in the best interest of clients, as opposed to actually giving the powers to the minister to take instructions that I think I'm not sure if the minister should be allowed to do that, because then he is going to be dictating things for clients, which I don't know how that can actually be allowed to happen. But again, and that's for the committee to decide. Then there's a whole issue around 7, the PIC, the minister to appoint, that's the chairperson. I'm trying to find the area where there's a request for union representation. Now, again, that's one I think that the committee and parliament must be very careful about, because currently labor is represented in the GEPF via a very detailed process. The employees of the public sector are appointed in terms of the Public Sector Act, which then, of course, mandates the relationship between the employer and the employee to be managed via the Public Service Bargaining Coordinating Committee, the PSCBC, which then ensures that only certain labor representatives who have a particular number of employees that they represent can actually belong to the bargaining council, so that you don't have a situation where a union with 7 members gets the same representation as a union with, say, 250 members. So the PFCBC is a very recognized, structured process to ensure that the relationship between the employer, the government, and the employees via labor are actually conducted. But the way the current recommendation kind of is structured basically ignores that. It's almost as if that doesn't exist, that labor now needs to be represented directly in the PIC. Currently, the labor is represented by the GPF, who, in terms of the PIC Act, is the depositor in the PIC. So when labor says we're not represented, quite honestly, that's not true, because they actually are represented by the GPF, and therefore, if they chose via the GPF to have a representation in the PIC, they could do so. They don't require any change in legislation. So maybe it's the whole issue around saying we need to actually circumvent the processes that currently exist to manage the relationship between employer and employer, which I think is quite a significant change. It doesn't only impact on the relationship between the PIC and the labor, but actually impacts the relationship between employer and employee generally in the public sector. So again, you need to be very careful about not introducing something that is starting a pattern that I don't think has been really clearly thought out and actually envisaged in how it needs to be implemented. I think those are broadly the items. On item number 8, again, the same issue. It changes the nature of the GEPF, not the GEPF, the PIC. It's saying now it has to be regulated by a body other than the one that currently regulates it, which is the FSB. And again, it shows that I don't think we have considered very clearly what the implications of some of the recommended amendments are. And that does require that one thinks about it. Of course, if that's what you want, that's fine, but then understand the implications. Yeah.
Well, I think this has gone far beyond what we asked for. I summarized to you 5 or 6 things.
Yeah.
So I don't know where this has come from.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you are here. So you're done, are you?
I'm done, Chair.
Yeah, all right. Let's hear from members. Yeah, fine. Okay. Look, this is an initial foray. It's preliminary. So can members respond to the GEPF, please? Yes, Mr. Lees.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just respond generally to the two, if I may, because I can't really remember where. They will put it in writing.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but that's fine. I'm just saying I might ask a question that's supposed to be for GEPF and for PIC. I'm still getting it wrong. But I think some quite good points are being made about this whole question of representation of labor. I'm not saying that we don't want that representation on PIC, but I think the points are well made that through the GEPF there is indeed representation, perhaps indirect, but there is, and it's very carefully crafted, etc., etc. And exactly what does the bill mean when it says, well, now we're going to have it in the PIC? Is it the whole replication of the selection process used to get representation on the GEPF going to be replicated in the PIC, which doesn't seem to, at face value, to make a hell of a lot of sense. And so, you know, I think we need to think through that. Sotole, you've expressed some very clear and strong views. Are you guys talking to each other about this? And we all do you guys agree that with the points you're making or not?
An exchange in terms of parliamentary rules and in terms of the need. You'll notice I've made not a single anecdote, lady, not a single comment that's exchanged, because we have to finish in time. There's yet another item to vote, so we must finish by 4:15 at the latest. Over to Dikileri.
Thank you. While we are going to think through the presentation and also waiting for the response in writing, may I also ask what difference will it make if you have direct representation of labor in the board and having an indirect representation through GEPF? Because I think last time when we were speaking in the old assembly, it was understandable and we've all agreed. So now that we seem to be walking backwards, I don't know. Maybe one needs to understand what difference will it make.
Not walking backwards at all. As for the 6 issues that we agreed on, that we're moving on. It's the other issues that he's raising, particularly. The resolution's here. We're all bound by it. It's not about that. We are not agreeing at this stage to forego worker representation on the PIC board. No, not that. It's the other issues about changing the nature of the PIC and which it's accountable to. That was never something we mandated. Nowhere did we discuss that. But on worker representation on boards, we're not going backwards, no. And that she's right. Answer the question about that. Is there any other thing? Okay.
Chair, let me start with the last one because it's a quick one. The challenge of having direct representation, either at the PIC, and although the Honourable Member asked about the PIC or the GPF, is that, for instance, the number of unions represented on the PSCBC alone is 18 unions. And those are the unions with more than 37,000 members each for them to actually come on board into that. Now, the fact that there's 18 unions in the public, in the PSCBC, does not tell you how many unions are there in the public sector. Now, I don't know the numbers, but I can tell you that in the public sector, it's probably more than, if I said 100, I probably wouldn't be wrong to say there are more than 100 unions.
100
unions. Most of them with very small membership. So it's now, the thing is, if you open for one, you're opening it for everybody else to have representation. So the PSCB process makes sure that the majoritarian principle actually is applied in the public sector. So let's say that you allowed the 18 members in the PSCBC to be represented on the PIC board. It means that now each one of them would want to have a representation, yeah. Which I think is...
So
can I clarify something?
Particularly, please.
As per our agreement, my understanding is that we are not saying each union should get a representation. We even agreed that through the PSCBC, the council, they can get a rep, depending on the number and how much you can agree. Maybe one person or two persons, I don't know. But our understanding was not that each union should have a rep. That was not the understanding. Thanks.
Any other comments?
No, I think the killer is that, I mean, Sitole, Mr. Sitole, you know that it was like a disingenuous remark, right? I mean, surely somebody as sophisticated as you knows that we can't expect 100 representatives. We said appropriate representatives provide. Now, on the matter of the PIC, worker representative PIC board, at this stage, you're not offering a compelling argument.
No.
Where you are convincing is in other respects.
I hadn't finished, I think, on representation. So the big one is what would be the basis of union being represented? Because remember, the assets are owned by the GPF. So what will labor be, what will be the basis of them being at the PIC board as opposed to the GPF, which is the asset owner? Or any other client, which is UIF or compensation fund. So I think that to me is really the issue.
Yeah, we will address those issues in the public hearings and thereafter. But that provision, Nolotando, you don't forget. Finally, if the committee at the very end of the process, having heard the unions and everybody else, declaratively decides otherwise, fine. At this stage, we don't have a mandate unless the committee changes its mind at the moment. Yeah. Responses, your question has been answered, Mr. Lee.
When we talked, we tried to talk, but there is actually a divergence because the PS is an asset manager and we're a client, so it's a difference. Yeah.
Okay.
Right, and now we should get Treasury's responses, then we tie up. Right.
Sorry, Chair, I was very sure. I just want to ask, we've had discussions with the PIC, but we haven't concluded, so we'll just, as far as possible, together with them, submit comment, because they already prepared some comment. But, yeah, we also have a concern about the bank issue, but you've dealt with that.
All right, fine. Can I suggest a process, colleagues, that the bill that as it exists, before you start redrafting, can we give you 14 days for the PIC, GEPF, and National Treasury to meet and come to some agreement on the two bills before us. Is 14 days reasonable? Or you want 21 days? Because Parliament will only look at this when? 21 days, right. Now, to the extent necessary, Nolotando and Frank, as legal advisors from Parliament, will be drawn into the process. I would suggest you include them from the outset. They don't have to fly from Cape Town to Swanee. There's no money. So, they will connect with you by teleconference or video conference. I know, Treasury, you've got the teleconference thing. Can we agree on that, colleagues? Look at both bills. Comment on it in writing. Can you send, well, rather than that, colleagues, instead of us being endless documentation, can we mandate you within 21 days to come with a proposal? These are the things we agree on in respect of the two bills. These are the things we disagree on. On the matter of the banking stuff, at this stage, we gave you no mandate, right? However, given that it's on the agenda now, maybe the unintended consequence of Nolotando, you thinking it's a proposal to put into the law, maybe that's got some substance. We leave it at that. But at this stage, we have given no such mandate. Okay, having said that, are we done? Yes, Frank, you want to say something?
No, just that, I mean, that clause, if it stands, is going to get Nolotando's name, Chairperson. That clause, if it stands in the end, is going to get her name, I hope. The one in the bank. It's the Nolotando clause, that one. The Chairperson for the... That's just on a lighter note, thank you. The written comments would be very useful because we need to include that in the memorandum that we need to send to the House to get permission to deal with the process, as you know. So once we have that, then we can proceed with it through the House. Thanks, Chair.
I just want to explain something. As far as I know, colleagues, are we listening, that this bill, we've got two bills, and we'll have to decide how we proceed. We may decide, you know, the easiest thing we've tried to ask Mr. Mania if you could persuade him to just convert his bill into a committee bill. Once, yeah, well, that's a problem. And then he can withdraw it, if, you know, as we put a mandate not to allow that. If he's prepared to hand it over as a committee bill, you can raise it to him again. Fine. And then we use the one bill. But at this stage, I don't have a mandate to have two separate bills. We'll have to have, I don't have a mandate to have one bill. So, there it is. It's a bit surrealistic, but there it is. Right. So, let's say we have two bills. Can you explain to the committee members what the process is? We can have hearings on both bills at the same time. Is that correct, Nolotando?
I think, Chair, if it's the same bills, then you can do that.
Right.
If the content is the same. Chair, I think the committee members' bill should follow its own process, and the committee bill should also follow its own process.
So can we advise you that we don't think that's necessary? Can you tell us why not? Because previously in exchanges I've been told yes, all it will mean is you'll have two bills. People can comment on both bills simultaneously. Now, in so doing, we have to be clear that we do not undermine any private members' bill's process. Because the Constitutional Court decided that Parliament cannot be flippant, is that right? When you have a private member's bill, it's to be treated. So the first priority is, how do you treat a private member's bill with the fullest regard that is due to it in terms of the Constitutional Court judgment and our rules? But at the same time, instead of duplicating the process, which is utterly absurd, how do we then have the committee bill? Since there is a considerable overlap, it seems to me it's entirely possible. If we are not happy with the legal opinion, we will look for external opinion. We're telling you now, because we cannot see how it can't be done, as long as we ensure that Mr. Mania's bill is given the attention it is due. Otherwise, we're going to have absurd things. We'll have a hearing at from 9 to 11, Mr. Mania's bill, then everybody's going to come back from 11 to 1 o'clock and comment again. Now, you know what? I'm not a lawyer, my friend, Nolotando. But even lawyers are capable of being rational now and then, with due respect. Right. Now and then. Nolotando, I'm needling you, right? Because it can be done, Nolotando. Go to Vincent Maleka and Morane and who's there? What's this guy? Gauntlet? Get an opinion. Which actually you got for free if you listen to me. Fine. MP knows me, man. Don't I always praise you, MP? Sorry? What did you say? Okay, MP, never again. Okay, right.
Well, that's done. We're over. You can leave because you've got more important things to do. PIC and GEPF, you've got to settle your fight. You can start now by sitting next to each other on the plane.
We like it very much. We like each other very much.
Yeah, but you're having differences. Start now. The committee passes a resolution right now that the PEC and the GEPF delegations will take the same flight, sit next to each other, start the discussion, and start the process, and so you can finish in 21 days. Thank you. Right. Good. Yeah, I assume they are. Right. Let's go on then to my friends to the Money Bills Act, which I think we can finish by 4:15 because there's the last section left. Am I right, Frank? Nolotando, are you involved in the Money Bills Act? No. You got work, right? So off you go. Thank you. Or you stay if you want. That's your right. Right. Where are we, Frank? I unfortunately left my notes in Madison, so I can't remember. But we are just about entering the last section with the PBO, isn't that right?
Yes, Chair, but we actually stopped on clause 8, or section 8 of the bill where we have the track changes.
Yeah.
So there's a few, but I've worked through them. There's not that much content other than in the MTBPS area, the section 12. I'm just going to have to restart my computer for some other reason. It just doesn't want to show correctly on there. So the
now, this version is the one you've subsequently amended. Is that right? The one we got today?
Yes. I'm not sure what you got today, but I would like to just carry on working on
it. I would rather you just
yes.
to, because my notes are all there.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I left it in management. Sorry? Who's Linda? What's she doing? Linda, there's a complaint about you from Tavoro. She says you're talking too loud. She's co-chairing now. Okay, you better keep in a good book. Tavoro is very powerful here. Okay, over to you guys.
Okay, Chairperson, while we wait for the screen to come on deep, we were last, on the 6th of February, we were at Clause 8, the adoption of the fiscal framework.
Yeah.
There were amendments in subclauses 1, 2, we're removing revenue proposals for the reason that revenue proposals are now in the definition of the fiscal
Fine,
framework.
Okay, so that's kind of correct. Let's move on to the next one.
Carried on.
7 is removed for the reason that it's covered elsewhere.
It's
right?
covered elsewhere.
Good, right. Next
it's
one, 9.
Up. 9, the passing of the Division of Revenue Bill. Just for clarification, we've taken some needless provisions out in clause 1, or subclause 1. And it's just for clarity, there's no real substance other than, of course, within 35 days, dealing with the issue of local government municipalities that we've spoke about in the last meeting already, Chair. The passing of the appropriation bill, similarly, there's some wording changes in paragraph B of subsection 1, and that I think if MP, I hope I'm not throwing, with page 11, clause 10.
Yeah,
yes, so what we've done there, those changes on paragraph B, if I'm not mistaken, those were proposals from National Treasury just to bring the wording in line with what is being used currently within government departments.
Yes.
Is that correct? I remember correctly. Paragraph C, we're putting in constitutional institution, that's what the PFMA uses. The rest is textual. If I go for paragraph subclause 5, on page 12, at the top paragraph B, the change there is just to bring paragraph C into B, just to combine those two, just to put the issue of including the minister's responses in the report. And the rest is really textual, Chairperson.
Any comments on that, colleagues?
Nope, can we move on?
Thank you, Chair. We're going to the next page, page 13. There's nothing new there, Chairperson.
Yeah.
That's the passing of the revenue bills. We haven't changed any substantial issues there, Chairperson.
Any comments on 11? No? Nope. Can we move on?
Okay. Let me just open this. Backwards.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Okay, page 14.
No, we're on page 14 now.
Page 14, Chairperson, the changes at the top there is also textual. It's just trying to...
Yeah, because he has a choice, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And then I'm going to get it on the screen now. Is it there? There we go. National Adjustments Budget.
Look, in 4, you just made a typographical change. Right?
That's typographical. The main change is in 6.
Yeah.
Because it used to be that we refer the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill to a joint meeting of the committees.
Yeah.
And that was a problem because it's a 76 bill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we just changed that back.
Yeah.
So not back, but we changed that to the normal legislative process.
Yeah, it's consistent with the rules.
Exactly, and
the
Constitution. First NA, then NCOP. Let me focus on the main things. The chair and subclause 7, something that we probably need instructions on is the 15 days to 9 days, 9 days to 15 days. If you remember correctly, this is now the issue of the two reports on the proposed fiscal framework and the revised fiscal framework, and whether it can be one or two reports. And as we did with the fiscal framework issues, the revised fiscal framework issues, we've said that they can be in one report or two reports.
Yeah.
So the committee has opened that up. But now there's a discrepancy between the number of days it's going to take. So the medium, if you can remember, the MDBPS is 30 days. Okay, so that's the proposed fiscal framework. We have 30 days. Here we had the revised fiscal framework must be 9 days. And in our discussion, we said, why don't we make both 15 days? Because it can be done in 15 days. So that is the option. I don't see a problem with that. If the committee wants to do it sooner, if the House wants to...
We have the choice.
Yes, you can do it sooner.
The principle, colleagues, is to give latitude to Parliament, right? And then within that, between the programming committee and the committees concerned, we can settle the matter. It's not to be stuck with this onerous deadline. There is something else that has occurred when you'll see Charles and my press statement today. This thing of a budget, for example, being presented on a Wednesday, and then the following Monday at noon, you must make submissions. The following Wednesday, you have a hearing. We have to sort that out. So in all the changes you are making, will we have the latitude around the budget time, not the MTBPS, to give more time for the public? So we don't have the hearings in the immediate week. We have it the week after. Because you know what? The question that arises is the beginning of the tax year and the beginning of the financial year. And if you extend the time between the minister's budget speech and the public hearings in Parliament, would you get into trouble with the tax and financial years? MP, you must think of a reply.
Chair, I don't think you're going to get into trouble with that.
Right.
I think there are built-in mechanisms in most of this legislation to deal with delays, and that's what we've built in now with this wording of "or as soon as reasonably possible."
So it'll allow. Yeah.
It will allow.
You see, for the MTBPS, it's fine, but for the budget, they have a tax year and a financial year, so it can be done. MP?
I don't see a problem. The only thing the PFMA requires is that the budget must be tabled before the start of the financial year, so any time before 1 April. So if you want to change the budget day and the tax, is tax legislation more.
It can be done, MP. Will you check with Momo and others? Yeah.
Okay.
Tax had huge problems with this thing because he felt that we're getting too... you know, he spoke to me at various conferences, and the fellow has fled now, right? But he had lobbied your minister, who seemed to agree with him. So check the practicalities out when I told him these things.
Previous minister or the current minister?
Ah, very funny, MP. You can get into trouble. You could get into trouble. That's an amazing thing of the sedate, quiet MP. I'm shocked. What have you been smoking at lunchtime, MP? MP, yeah. This is a good one, eh? Anybody videotape this? This is being recorded. Shall we send it to your bosses, eh?
That's 15 versus 9 days. If we're wanting the flexibility, which I think we do, surely there should be a word within 15 days. Because the way it reads now is it has to be done on the 15th day.
Yeah, I put it after, but I think it's so much easier to never have options.
And just on the, for clarity's sake, if there is then this request to have extended public hearings or further public hearings or more time, then one can do it, because that's a constitutional obligation of the committee to say, well, we're not going to do it because we have... No, I saw that, yeah. Chair, the next substantial or substantive change would be the time. Yes, we removed the 9 days. That is something that Mr. De Beer was very strong on, and he's correct on this, because we gave him 9 days for the NCOP to pass the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, and it's a 76 bill that must go to the provinces. So we've removed that. Totally. So there's no time limit on it, but the whole budget must still be done within that 30 days. So we can program in between the outside.
Be done within 30 days.
Yes.
So there's no law requiring
No, that is there in sub 19 still. So, and of course you can only report on the adjustments appropriation, but after we've passed the Division of Revenue. So that is still there. So that's fine. So that's fine, and we can look at sub 19, which deals with the 30 days. Chair, other money bills, clause 13, there's nothing there. And then we get to the PBO, which there's a few changes. Section 15 or clause 15, sub 1, it's now clear that it's a juristic person. Okay. Chair, there was a comment. Well, the appointment of the director remains the same, but it's a fixed 5A. We jump to 5A. So, yeah, at the bottom of page 17. Okay. Let me just then. Where are we now? Yeah. There we go. That's where we are. Chair, there was a comment here from Dr. Muller, I must just say, that says that we must appoint a person that's fit and proper. So that was a comment he made. There might be whatever motive he had for that. It's something that, I mean, we can't ignore it. It was a public comment, so it's there. But the conditions we set out, the characteristic, the qualifications, and what the director must do, if you look even at 10A, when we brought those prudential authorities sort of requirements into the bill, sets out what the director must do, and that deals in a way with fit and proper. But it's something that's coming from the public comments, which are there, but that is not in the bill itself. It's the notes I made. What is in the bill, the instruction we got, the director must be on a fixed term contract for 5 years that then can be renewed, page 18, on its performance, at paragraph C. There was another question there from the public comments to say who's going to do that, but for me it's very clear. Through the board and the speaker and the chairperson.
There's no need for it.
I don't think there's a need for a chair. On the other hand, the Public Service Act says everybody must...
If it's there in the public... What do you think? We should put it in or...
It's not going to change anything, really, Chair. I think it can go in there. Let's put it in.
Especially because we have suspicions about the current director.
Chair, that's... But in the Public Service Act, all state officials must be fit and proper.
Does it stay in the bills related to that, Nikki?
No, it doesn't.
Other bills, they don't do this.
Well, if you look at what we've done with the financial sector regulation bill, everywhere you must be a fit and proper person.
You've done that.
Director. Yes, that's
okay,
what put
fine.
In there. And the FSB has got a whole schedule on how to do it.
Thank you, Chair. I think we had a chat with Frankie about it, because I was just saying, you know, it's quite important. I think the first point was to say there's a rationale behind the input by Dr. Mailer, but I do not come to that aspect. So there's separate issues here. But I think the point that we discussed quite extensively with Advocate Frankie was that what is the objective of having that? That's firstly. Does it improve the current definitions, or does it makes it better? Or does it create either or? If you have fit and proper, you'd assume that requisition of the qualifications means qualification experience and all that it's fit and proper. But that's a separate issue. But now, then I said, when, then we had our in our discussions, rather, when you put it there, define it. Because clearly, if I'm saying there's a rationale behind it, if you leave it quite undefined, it's is it easy to implement or so and so on. I think that's the point. That I think.
Comments and reply? Mr. Leith?
Mr. Chairman, if it's a prerequisite in any appointment as defined in the public service, whatever, then I don't see the need for it here. But if it's not, there's no harm in putting it in. But, I mean, it's like saying reversing backwards. If it's already there.
Okay, what do you think, Fred?
Chairperson, when we look at page 18 at the bottom, 10A, then B2, it says that the director must act with fidelity, honesty, integrity, and in the best interest of the PBO in managing. That is fit and proper.
Right, covered. Although in many bills, I must tell you today, talking to somebody who's been sitting here since 1998, MP, what do you think?
I think the only thing, this is a requirement prior to appointment, the fit and proper one. Because I think what Frank's reading from is that once you're appointed, how you should act. And the requirements in the Public Service Act won't apply to the PBO, because it's only for Public Service Act personnel.
So what do you think?
No, I don't think there's any harm in putting it in.
Yeah, let's put it in. Fine. Good. Let's move on. Next point, please.
Chair, I spoke about the renewal. Then from 10A onwards is the sort of the detail of the financial management responsibilities of the director.
Yeah,
No, we have. We've not changed. It's all there.
On the financial aspect, do you have any changes in the proposal?
Is
this not negotiated
with you?
No,
the
financial, yeah, it is.
So have you got any new amendments you want to introduce? No. Can we agree on it then? I'm not sure whether you agree or you don't agree at this late stage.
Sorry, Chair, I was just a bit caught up in the previous point.
Yeah.
I think that what I indicated in our discussion with Frank was that if you leave it undefined, it's...
I mean, what undefined?
Fit and proper, what does it mean?
No. We're not going to provide it. It's a normal, conventional thing. Fit and proper is used in many... Am I right, MP? Used in many, many bills.
But in many bills, it's defined.
Is it defined, MP? No, it's not defined.
Frankly, we looked at the which act we looked at where it was quite defined. I mean, when I said we have an extended discussion of, say, how does it improve, and we looked at the financial service, which act we looked at, financial services...
Our financial sectors regulation, there's the FSB Act.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you, Dimasani. In some acts you do get that, for instance, the FSB must give guidelines, publish guidelines, what is fit and proper. And they then set out in the FSB that at the moment it's about a 3 or 4 page of what you must be to be fit and proper.
So guidelines, not
in the law. No, it's guidelines.
I've come across the term since 1990.
Before Parliament, we have fit and proper. We've never defined it that I know. In the definition section.
Okay, I think, like as I said, Chair, there's a rationale behind the input that came in. The Dr. Miller took Parliament to court, to CCMA, alleging that the staff is not fit and proper to be in PBO. And I think it was a fair point raised to say need to be a fit and proper in the legislation. But I'm saying that if you leave it open-ended, the point I'm just raising, I raised to Frank, if you leave it open-ended, it's fairly to be interpreted by whoever want to interpret it there. I'm citing the case that happened where he took the office to CMA.
Why did you say that
analysis? No, I start by saying
that. But that's what I said as a rationale. I said there was a rationale behind it.
You should have said this happened here where he argued, right? That's the basis on which you're raising it.
Yes.
That makes much more, let's say, acceptability here. But to raise it as a generic thing, I can tell you now, there's thousands of bills with regard to this thing.
Sure.
And we don't define it. Now you're saying that you had a practical case in court,
yep,
right, where he said somebody or the other is not fit and proper, right?
Yep.
Right. Now, can you two lawyers reply whether that justifies excluding it, or the option B, including it but defining it. And how would you define it? I don't think you should define it. If you do that, then you're going to have problems. And at this late stage, do we really want to... Can I once again repeat? This is the first tranche of a two-tranche or a two-phase process in addressing amendments to the bill. We're not going to deal with everything because you've come, MP, with a whole lot of proposals at the 11th hour. NGOs have approached me now, last Friday, to say they've got some amendments. And theirs are extreme to, like, completely revamp the bill. And, like, you know, long periods of public consultations and all that. But it's their right. This is their parliament. So, in short, two lawyers reply. Let's start with you, MP. Right. What's your view?
So should Frank, we put Frank can have to...
Based on what Dumisani is saying.
I'm just reading the way we have it in law saying, maybe cases where it's defined, but generally it's not. In the Public Service Act, it says the person must be a South African citizen or permanent resident and fit and proper. Now, in the context of the Public Service, I can give an example. You may even appoint someone that has a criminal record. But for instance, if you want to appoint a CFO and that person is guilty of a financial crime, then surely that person won't be fit and proper. So it's very difficult to define for positions, in my view, like this. In the case of financial sector, it's different. And I think it's a good thing to have in case you found out something, or it's a prerequisite for appointing. And I think defining it can be very difficult.
Then the issue is, do we have it or not? What do you think, MP?
My view should be in with it. Yeah.
What's your view?
Sir, I can't think of an argument not to put it in. Put it
what's
that
your view? I
seems to me overall, the two lawyers and Mr. Lees are saying, let's have it, but we're not defining it. Good, let's move on.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next area is right, if you look at page 20, where the request for information, it's a new clause that was asked to put in. There was also some public comments on that.
Well, we agree with that.
Yes, but should we, there were two comments made on that. Should we not include their time, yes, that it must be provided timeously?
Yes.
I think that, and then there was a comment to say it should be in the format requested by the budget office. I think that contradicts timeously because if you...
I think that's true.
Okay.
Why do you insist it must be according to your form?
No. That was a comment coming from Sean Miller again.
You're happy with this stuff?
Yeah, I think it's fine, Chair. The one thing was the appointment of an acting one. There was a comment on the acting chairperson. It should be the comment was that it should be a transparent process. And my view is no, it should. It does not have to be a transparent process because it's not an appointing of a director. Is someone that's in the budget office that's going to act for a certain period of time. You can't prescribe that period of time because you don't know what's happened. No.
Yeah.
No. We don't.
It's an internal process. An internal process doesn't have to be transparent. It's not a permanent. I think I spoke about it the last time. I said internal processes that are meant to be short-term doesn't need a thorough consultation process, unlike when we were appointing the director. That's why there's this mentioning of fit and proper, because it shows interest in who is appointed, because sometimes it leads to litigation where people challenges the appointments. But in this case, it's an acting position. Therefore, it's meant to be short-term, so it doesn't have to be a transparent process.
We're just giving the rights, the power to make regulations. That's it.
A final bite at it after we finish the budget process, right? So is there some way we can ask the committee secretary to find a printer that actually does this in color before we vote on it? We're not going to vote.
See, he changes today. He says
Tandi, not every document. This is the final version, right, Alan? Final version. Also, Tandi needs to report within 14 days on her negotiations with the secretary, acting secretary, on where she's got in respect of all documents being...
Never printed.
Right. Thank you. Anybody else? Nope. Thank you all. Goodbye. Right. The ANC study group meets here now at 4 o'clock. And we've got 25 minutes before we go down to vote at 4:30. And Tandy's got heels, so we may have to finish at 4:20.
Thank you.